Okay, Shalom Aleichem, everybody. We'll pick up from where we left off last week, chapter 27, Perchav Vav. I did not plan on spending the whole time last week on one perek. That was not my plan at all. It just kind of happened that way. I planned to, as we've been doing every class, kind of plowing through the prokim, just knocking out prokim one at a time. That was my goal, but we'll pick up today basically where we were holding. When we started with chapter 26, and again we'll continue now in Perchav Zayin, was that up till Perakim Aleph through Chaf Hei is the system of Tanya. It's the basic outline, the system, and if you do it, it works really well. And you can test it if you want. You can feel free to test the system of the Tanya as well and see how it works for you. That's the best way, is really not to believe me or not to believe anybody else, but to test it and see for yourself how it works, which is what we've been discussing last couple weeks we got together. So we asked the question last week, why doesn't the Tanya just end at Perchav Hei? You got the system, you got the different details, why don't we just end over there? So we said the reason why we don't just end over there after Perchav Hei is because life happens. Sometimes you're driving along and you know the different parts of the vehicle, you know how to turn right, you know how to signal, and you know how to stop and so on and so forth, but sometimes something unexpected happens. You get a flat tire. And all of a sudden you're like, whoa, nobody prepared me for a flat tire. I mean, you told me what the tires are, and you told me how to brake and how to turn and how to signal and how to turn on the air conditioning and the radio, or whatever it might be. But you didn't tell me what to do if I'm driving and all of a sudden I'm off the road and I can't drive anymore. What am I supposed to do then? What if I get a flat tire in life? In other words, what am I supposed to do when I encounter problems? That's what the Alter Rebbe begins to deal with in Perchav Vav, the problems of life, the flat tires of life. And because we know life is up and down, it's we have our challenges, everybody has our challenges. Some people have big challenges, other people have smaller challenges, but each of us, whatever my challenge is, that's probably the biggest challenge in the world, isn't it? So the bottom line is we all have our challenges, we have to learn how to deal with it. And part of the key of everything the Alter Rebbe is telling you through Tanya is you gotta remain positive. You gotta stay besimcha. Because if you don't, well, first of all, you just gotta be besimcha. Even though Hashem besimcha, that's first of all. It's an integral component of avodas Hashem. But second of all, if I'm not besimcha, if I can't remain positive, if I don't remain positive, rather, then you get lazy. You get weak. You get taken advantage of. Things happen, the Nefesh HaBahamis overcomes you because, hey, I'm sad anyway, I'm not happy about life. It's so much easier to give into taivas, etc. So I got to remain positive. I need new techniques to remain positive in life, no matter how many flat tires I get. Some people, you look at their lives and you think, man, this guy gets a flat tire every day. That must be hard to be him. It's true, some people get flat tires every day. It's true. They need to learn, and we need to learn, how to give ourselves a new perspective so we can remain positive no matter what. And we began with a sports analogy in last week in chapter 26 of two people wrestling. If one of them is strong, is sad or lazy, he'll lose even if he's stronger. We got to remain enthusiastic. We got to remain positive. Now, if a person has a flat tire, like a real flat tire, you're trying to get to a wedding and you get a flat tire, it's your best friend's wedding, you're going to miss the wedding. Or maybe it's even something worse in your life. You got a real problem, a real gashmiyistika problem, health, God forbid, or something like that. What do you do? So the Alter Rebbe said, Perchav Vav, there's two types of good, concealed good and revealed good. Concealed good, we gave an analogy, is like if you give a child a $20,000 savings bond, but he wanted the $1.99 toy car, and he throws a fit. You gave me a piece of paper. You say, no. It's worth $20,000 if you just hold out for 15, 20 years. The kid doesn't care. He has no idea. Now, it's true. That is a better good than some silly little toy car. It's a much better good. But the child is not capable of seeing how it's a better good. That's the concealed good. That's an analogy for concealed good. Or even a more extreme analogy we gave last week. The child runs into the street. The parent comes and grabs the child almost violently and screams at him, "Don't you ever do that again!" Screams at him. Whoa, the kid's blown away. "Tati, why are you yelling at me?" And he screams even more. That's concealed good. Sometimes the father or the mother has to scream at the child. Pull them, yank them out of the street. Really, that's a bracha. Really, it's a good thing. Really, it's for the child's better health and better life, but we can't always see it. So the Altarevbe says, this is a tool that can help us to change our perspective when we encounter, chas v'shalom, a challenge in our gashmiistic life, in our material life. To know there's concealed good and there's revealed good. The concealed good's better. It's $20,000 as opposed to a little toy car. It's much better, but it's concealed. Yeah.
Is there a mitzvah specifically to be a simcha? Like, is it like a mitzvah, or is it a hitter mitzvah, or what's...
That's a good question. The Altarebbe does not address that in the Tanya. I think for the very simple reason that that is more of a halacha question, or a maybe not halacha per se, it could be a halacha per se question. And the Tanya is not a work of halacha. So this is an issue that's not addressed in the Tanya, because the Altarebbe believes it for the poskim and so forth.
Like
the Altarebbe himself is a poskim, but I'm saying it's not fitting the topic of the Tanya.
Is a value be'etzem, or is it just in order to get other things?
Okay, that's a good question. So even though the Altarebbe doesn't address the halachic aspects of this, was a good question. Again, this is not the forum for that. That's not what the Tanya is about. But the Altarebbe is discussing Simcha a lot in here, as we've seen. And my understanding is that it's not a hiddur. It's not something, a nice bonus in a mitzvah. But it is how you need to do the mitzvah. In other words, like this. Ivdu as Hashem b'simcha. It's not Ivdu as Hashem. And if you could be b'simcha, that's also good. It would make the mitzvah better. No. Ivdu as Hashem, how? How should I serve Hashem? B'simcha. That's the way, I don't want to say this out loud, but that's the only way. Don't quote me, even though we're recording it. That's the only way to serve Hashem is b'simcha. Again, that's not commenting on the halacha. The Tanya is not the place to make halachic statements. That we could do elsewhere. But yes, in the view of the Tanya, it's not just a hiddur, it's not just a bonus, it's an integral part of every single mitzvah. What we're learning in Tanya, is why it's so integral. If you're not b'simcha, if you don't remain positive, it's going to be so much easier for you to give into taivas, one taiva and another taiva, and before you know it, you're just dragged down into the Yetzirah's game. It's finished. Yeah.
Answer the first question you had about is it a mitzvah or is it not a mitzvah? There's different like Charles Truva's farm speak about. Like there's 613 mitzvahs, and then there's also Diorisa Tzivuyim, that the Keter includes. We have Tzivuyim, the things to do, but they're not considered part and parcel of the 613 mitzvahs, though they're still, like for example, one that's the place you bring that it's not a mitzvah, but it's still a Tzivuy, Tzar Bala Chaim, or I think even something that brings Simcha, that it's not part of the 613 chapters, but it's still something that the Keter tells us to do, and we have to do it. Same thing with, also kind of separated that Emunas Hashem. Ramban doesn't count it as a mitzvah. He says that it's great. It's greater than a mitzvah. Mm-hmm. So there's some things that are kind of some thoughts for that. Precursor.
So it's a necessary predecessor to have a mitzvah.
Yeah.
If you don't believe in an Abishur, then what's a mitzvah anyway?
Yeah,
By the way, I tell students this sometimes. You know, there's our opinions of some of the greatest rabbis ever that hold that Emunas Hashem is not a mitzvah. People don't believe me when I say it. They're like, yeah, right. Okay. So don't believe me. Look it up. But anyway, thank you for that. It's true. And that's why I said that the Altarebbe doesn't address it. It's not the type of question addressed in the Tanya. That's the type of question addressed in Sfarim of Halacha. Poskim, the Sfarim that count the mitzvahs, whatever. It's not relevant to us in the discussion, is it actually a mitzvah or not? You've got to be besimcha, and here's what it's going to do for your life. It's going to lift you up. It's going to help you. What's the word? Weather the storm, so to speak. The storms of life. So yes, does that help? Yeah. Okay. So we have to redefine our perspective. The bottom line is: are we going to allow our animal soul to tell me what makes me happy, or am I going to let my godly soul tell me what makes me happy? That's the bottom line of chapters 26 and on right now. Who's dictating what makes me happy? Now, then the next thing in chapter 26 was that what if a person has problems not with material matters, but problems with spiritual matters? They're slipping up, making mistakes in their spiritual life, their avodas Hashem. So the Altar says quickly, okay, that's an easy one to deal with. Just tell Mr. Yitzhahara, whoever it is that comes to argue with you about how useless you are because you did this and you did that, I'm happy to talk to you. Let's make an appointment tonight at 11 p.m. We'll talk then. Make an appointment. Pushes it off. And that's an appropriate time. We're not meant to deal with problems all the time. Certain times. So that's what he says. Push it off. Make an appointment. Most likely, by the way, the Yitzhahara will not show up to that appointment. Most likely. If you struggle with it, if you encounter that problem, try the make an appointment with my secretary approach. You'll see how it works. Now we get to chapter 27. Chapter 27, unlike chapter 26, which says, I did some bad things. I've got some problems, either materially or spiritually. Chapter 27 is, I didn't do anything bad. I just want to do bad things. I just have a lot of tithes. I'm drawn to all sorts of inappropriate things, and I feel like a loser. Really? Like, this is what I want in my life? Like, some of the things I want, I don't want to say it. I don't want to say out loud what I want. And the things that I'm drawn towards, it's disgusting. I don't want anybody to know about it. It's embarrassing. A person might even feel ashamed of what they want. That's chapter 27. So the Alter Rebbe says, Perek of Zayin, on page 66, Ve'imo atzus ein medaygas avoynus. The sadness the person experiences is not a result they're worried about their sins. They did actual sins, they're worried about it. No. They have machshavas aris. They have hirhurim roim. They have bad thoughts of doing all sorts of crazy things that are unspeakable, unmentionable, embarrassing, a shame. The Alter Rebbe says, do not be disheartened by the struggle. Don't let it get you down. Why? Skip two lines. Adirab. Not only should you not let it get you down, but adirab. Usually the smoich b'chelkoi. You should be happy. Happy that you had an inappropriate desire. Happy that you want to do something that is not the proper thing to do. Why? Sh'av sh'nefaz of machshavtoi. Even though you taka have this machshav, you taka want to do it, you think about it. But humesich daito mehen, you push it away. You don't focus on it, you don't think about it. The fact the thought popped into your mind, no. So you're a regular person. Shkoyach. But don't think about it. Don't dwell on it. Be mekayim this pasuk, the mitzvah of lo yisasurach elevavchem. Do not stray. You have an opportunity to do a mitzvah. Maybe you didn't want to do this mitzvah. I wanted to do a different mitzvah. Hashem, you're giving me an opportunity to do a mitzvah? Thank you. I want that opportunity. Let me do a more gishmak mitzvah. I want to have my name on a building at Yeshiva University. That's the mitzvah I want to have. A gishmak mitzvah. I want to have a beautiful esrig. And daven and shul, gishmak. With a beautiful halel and a nanuim and a gishmak esrig. That's the mitzvah I want to have. I don't, mitzvah lo yisasuru, come on. I don't want that mitzvah. Sorry. Too bad. That's your mitzvah. When a person is presented with these inappropriate thoughts, no, that's an opportunity. You should be besimcha that the Eibishter is handing you on a silver platter an opportunity to do this gevaldik mitzvah. Lo yisasuru. It's not the mitzvah you wanted to do? Okay, too bad. You wanted to do a big fancy mitzvah? No. What's a big fancy mitzvah anyway? Who determines what the bigger mitzvahs are anyway? It's an opportunity. The story of a chassid came to the Tzemach Tzedek. He says, Rebbe, what should I do? I have no taiva to learn Torah. Imagine what level he's already holding on to ask such a question. I don't have a cheshek to learn, Rebbe. What should I do? Rebbe says, no. What should I do that I do want to learn? No, I want to learn, the Tzemach Tzedek said. So when I learn, yeah, big surprise. You don't want to learn. Now we're talking business. Now we're talking. You can learn. You can really learn. Or the Maisa that happened with the Rebbe. There was a shlich somewhere who a guy in his community was coming closer to Yiddishkeit and becoming Shomer Shabbos and Shomer Kashrus, more and more frum, and it was mamish, you know, becoming frum. There was one little problem. He was dating a non-Jewish girl and they wanted to get married. Just a little problem, right? The shlich says, you should go talk to the Rebbe about this. Guy says, Rabbi, I don't need to talk to your rabbi. I've spoken to many rabbis. My parents got me to speak to this rabbi and that rabbi and this rabbi and that rabbi. This one tells me I'm going to burn. This one tells me this. This one tells me that. I've heard it. I don't need it. Somehow, I don't know how, the shlich prevailed on this guy to go speak to the Rebbe. Okay, fine. I'll go speak to the Rebbe. He goes to the Rebbe. And he just tells the Rebbe everything. Rebbe puts it on the table. The Rebbe says, I envy you. What? You envy me? Yeah, I never had such a desire, the Rebbe says to him. I never wanted to do such a thing. I never had that challenge to overcome it. You are given that challenge, you'll overcome it. Imagine what is accomplished that you're going to overcome this challenge. That you're going to say no, lo yisasur, you're not going to do it. Wow. That's the Tanya. That's the classic Rebbe. Turn everything upside down on its head. You think it's a problem. I admire you for that. I envy you for this challenge you have. Wow. What a tremendous potential. You have a struggle on the inside, Perek Chav Zayin says. Do not let it get you down. Ve'adirabah. Yesh loyli smoyach. Ah, you should do chassidish tanz. You should dance. You should jump on the table and dance. Skip to the next page, Lamed Daled at the top. Ve'adirabah. The fact that you're sad, you're depressed about the fact that you have a taiva, who do you think you are? You don't even, what do you think you are? You thought you're a tzaddik? You're upset that you're not on the madreg of a tzaddik? Are you kidding me? This is what the Altibus says. Knocking the guy down. Really? You're so arrogant. You think you shouldn't have a little thought in your mind of doing something little that's not the appropriate thing to do? That's for tzaddikim. You're not a tzaddik. If you only recognize your place, that you're in fact very distant from the level of a tzaddik. V'halavai ho yobeinoni v'leirasha kol yomav. Halavai, you should even be a Beinoni. Remember, who's the Beinoni? He's the one who has a struggle on the inside, but controls his machshava dibur maisa. Halavai, you should even do that. And you're upset that you're not a tzaddik. But this is the job of the Beinoni, the Alter Rebbe says. Not to get disheartened, not to feel downtrodden, that you have the internal struggle. That means you're normal. Your challenge is to rise above it. Your challenge is to say, Rebbe, I don't want to learn. Ah, I'm going to learn anyway. Rebbe, I have this challenge, I have that challenge. I'm going to overcome it. I'm going to push it aside. It's an opportunity to be besimcha and to dance givaldik. Questions or comments? Even if it's in the middle of davening Shemayin Esrei Ne'il Yom Kippur. Look, Perek Chav Ches, page Lamed Hei, Perek Chav Ches. Va'afilu im noiflim lo yiruhurei taivis v'sho'or machshovi zorz b'shasu avayda b'teira v'yitfila v'chavana. Even if you're having all your taivas and the biggest taivas and the worst taivas and the worst machshavas zaras, mamish in the middle of Shemayin Esrei. Obviously, when else would they happen, right? That's what many people say. I get my best machshavas zaras in Shemayin Esrei. It doesn't happen when I'm wasting time. When I'm doing nothing, I don't have machshavas zaras. This is the chassid comes to Al-Rebbe. The whole time is yichidus. The whole time is an audience with the Alter Rebbe. A chassid pouring out his heart to the Rebbe. Rebbe, help me. I don't have machshava zaras when I'm wasting time, when I'm involved in narishkat. I have them dafka when I'm b'shas. That's when I get my machshava zaras. The biggest ones, the best ones. Zokte al tirebe, al yoshis leva alein. Forget about it. Just forget about it. That's it. Push it away. Do not think about it. Do not dwell on it. Skip down to the line right where the two dots are, about 10 or so lines down. Line begins Eich. Ach afal pichein al yipo libo bekirboy. Do not become depressed. Don't feel down that you have machshava zara in the middle of davening or learning Torah or whatever. Liyas mizeh eitz of nivza b'shas o'avoda. That you should be sad and depressed during avodas Hashem. Shetarach liyas b'simcha rabba. Because as we said before, you have to be b'simcha. Simcha rabba when you're serving Hashem. Ela adrabba. On the contrary, not only should you not feel saddened or depressed when you have these machshava zara at the most inappropriate times. Ela adrabba. Yischazik yoyser. You should be encouraged and gather more strength. You should just pull yourself together and increase your simcha. With even more simcha. How so? Why? Why should I be more besimcha? Mainly you tell me don't get depressed. Okay, I understand already from the first part of Tanya, I shouldn't be depressed. It's going to ruin my life if I'm depressed. My avodas Hashem will go down the tubes. But not only should I, but I should be b'simcha, I should increase my simcha even. When I get a machshava zara in the middle of Shemayin Esrei, I should be happy and very happy. Really? Yeah. It says, b'sumaya libo, you should take to heart, ki nefilas a machshava zara, the very fact that you have a machshava zara, where did it come from? Why do you have this machshava zara? Why? Where is it from? He may have klipa. Yeah.
Is he trying to say that the simcha is part of how you like defeat the machshava, or just that the attitude, just to, like a separate point about the attitude you should be having?
Yes. Yes, both. I think both.
It's good.
In other words, there's two parts to the simcha. One is that you have to be b'simcha, ivdos Hashem b'simcha. That's the proper way to serve Hashem. It's an integral part of the mitzvah. But the second aspect of simcha is that it's like having a better war strategy. It's going to help you win the battle. You're a stronger team. Imagine if you're a platoon leader and there's low morale. How are your boys going to make it in war? There's low morale. Your job, or a sports team, right? One of the jobs of a coach in a sports team is to inspire and lift up the players. That they should be inspired to go out there and give it everything they have. I think here also, that one is just that got to be a simcha, even though Hashem is simcha. It's an integral part of the mitzvah. But number two is, you'll have a strategical advantage with simcha. You'll be at the top of your game if you're besimcha. The Nefesh Bahamis will have a much more difficult time knocking you down, or even a little bit getting you down. So he's saying that when you have a Machshava Zara in the middle of Tefillah, or Torah, learning Torah, whatever, not only should you not be depressed, but you should be happy. And not only should you be happy, but you should be even happier. Yischazik Yoser, Yosef Oimitz, right? Even more so. Why? Because you got to think for a second like this. I'm having a machshava zara right now. I was in the middle of learning a Blad Gemara. I'm in the middle of davening to the Abishar. Where in the world does machshava zara come from? That doesn't make sense. I'm learning Cheskas Abatim and I should have a machshava zara. How does it make sense? I'm saying Sechazed Na'inein Abishuv Chalatziyan. I should have a machshava zara. Where did it come from? It's so out of place. So he says, where does it come from? It comes from klipa. That's where it comes from. It comes from the other side. It's coming from a side that is waging a war against you. With your godly soul. So what? So there's a war inside me. Yeah, I know that already. I know there's a war inside me. We learned in the beginning of Tanya already, right? I know there's a war inside me. Yeah, no, so what? Oh, v'noida. Where is it known? Derech ha-nilchomim. When there's a war going on. V'chein ha-ne'evokim yachad. People wrestling. It's a wrestling match. What's known? K'she'echad misgaber. When one of them is starting to win. He's about to pin the other guy to the mat. One guy's losing. What happens? The second guy now pulls out all the stops. I don't want to lose. He does everything he can to avoid being pinned to the mat. So when you're learning and you're davening, you have machshava zara, it's a sign that you're actually making headway. You're actually doing something. Maybe you said something of davening bekavana. Maybe you learned part of the Gemara and you connected to it, and you meant it, and you realized it's the Eibishter's Torah, and it started to affect you. What? Well, look what this guy's doing. The Nefesh Bahamis gets scared. What's going to happen to me? Where are my taivas going to go? If this guy's going to sit in Chesed Chazapatim all day, what about my taivas? I got to pull out all the stops. Now, I cannot let this guy pin me to the mat. So he pulls out all the stops, throws Machshav Zaras left and right, every direction at you, trying to knock you down. But now I learned Tanya, so I know these Machshava Zaras are an indication that I'm actually making headway. I'm actually getting somewhere. Givaldik. It's a good sign. Again, turns the whole world upside down on us. It used to be, before the Tanya, I had a Machshava Zara during davening. Oh, you're surprised? Yeah, of course you had a Machshava Zara. You're a loser. The Haraya, you had a Machshava Zara during davening. What kind of mensch has a Machshav Azar during davening? Come on. Comes the Alter Rebbe and says, no, punk faket. Exactly the opposite. The Machshav Azar is a good sign. Questions, comments? Yes. How does one go about pushing the Machshav Azara away? That's a good question. The answer is, it's not necessarily easy. Necessarily. It involves, as we've been saying now, to realign our perspective. Remember, we touched on the idea, who's going to be dictating what I'm into? Who dictates what I want? Is it my Nefesh HaBahamis? Or is it my Nefesh HaLokis? And we're trying to redirect and trying to shift our perspective that my Nefesh HaLokis should be the one who dictates what I'm interested in, what I'm about. It takes time to readjust perspective. It takes time to shift into a new way of thinking. But that's the start. Now, when the person's B'Shas Maisa involved in it, the key is not to get involved in it. We actually skipped that part, but right after in the fourth line, see the fourth line of Perek Chof Ches? The line begins Ella. We stopped over there at the period, Kerega, but we'll read a little bit anyway since you ask. V'gam al yishoyte. Don't be a fool. Lasik ba'alos hamidois. Shol machshav azara. Don't be a fool to think, let me analyze this machshav azara. Why do I have it? What is it really telling me? Is it Freudian? Is it this? Is it that? Let me think about where it comes. No, don't be a shoiter. Don't be a fool to start to try to analyze it, take it apart, and get to the depth of it. Where is it? Where did that Machshav Azara really come from? No. Most people will not succeed at that. But rather, as he says earlier in Perek Chof Vav, that when you wrestle with someone who's dirty, you yourself, even if you win, you also end up getting dirty. Don't get involved. Just pretend that it's not there. Maybe it's not easy. Yeah. You're right. Maybe it's not easy. Yeah.
I was under the impression the way to get rid of bad thoughts is to stop or think about something else, and instead of just trying to push away the negative thoughts. Like, I found, like, an experience, like, when if I've had negative thoughts, like, trying not to think about it kind of, like, brings it up.
Yes, there actually have been psychological studies that prove that if a person is told not to think about something, it's almost impossible not to think about it.
Yeah, so doesn't that go against what you're saying, that someone is able to control their impulses? Like, you sounded like you were saying that just like someone can control what actions they can do, they could also control the thoughts.
Well, okay, they can't control what thoughts enter their mind. They can control, we can control whether we dwell on those thoughts. So the fact that the thought pops into your mind, that's not under your control. What you do with that thought is under your control. Does that make
sense? You're saying it's possible to say, I want to stop thinking about this and just not think about it without even...
Well, you need an alternative, as you're suggesting. This I didn't mention, and this is a key point. You need an alternative. Like it says, the famous Maisa with Yosef and the famous Rashi, right? They threw Yosef in the pit. V'haboy reik ein boy moyim. You know this pasuk. The pit was empty. There was no water in it. So Frek Rashi, that's obvious. If the pit was empty, of course there was no water in it. Just tell me v'haboy reik, and I would understand automatically ein boy moyim, because obviously there's no water in it. You just told me it was empty. So Rashi says, yeah, moyim ein boy, aval nechoshim akravim yesh boy. There was no water, but there was something else. The Torah is telling me nechoshim akravim. There were snakes and scorpions. Which the boyer, the pit, represents the mind. Mayim represents Torah. V'haboy reik, the pit's empty. Ein boy mayim, there's no Torah in the mind, in the pit. But other things will come in. Nechashim v'akravim, snakes and scorpions. So yes, you're right. It's a very important point that you raise. That it's not just enough to say, I won't think about it. You have to replace it with something else, with something positive. That something positive might be, I mean, he gives the example of tefillah, that something positive might be to look back in the siddur, look at the words, try to focus on the words. That's why it's an etza, to help with a person's kavanah and davening, to actually daven out of the siddur. Some of us think maybe it's childish to daven from the siddur. I know Baal Peh already. I'm already a big boy. I know Baal Peh is not necessarily a good way to daven. Close my eyes and have kavanah. Not necessarily is that an effective way to daven. Sometimes the most effective is to actually look in the siddur. I remember one of my rabbis in yeshiva, at first I noticed it, I was like, really? He used to point with his finger at every single word. Like this. I remember I first saw him, I noticed him once, I was like, wow. Are you kidding me? I'm like, wow, he's brilliant. You know how hard it is to get distracted when you're actually pointing at every single word and looking and reading word by word by word? Sukkot Zimra and Birch Kishma, you know, wow, that's good stuff. So yeah, you need something to replace it with. That very something might be the thing that the Nefesh Bahamas is trying to distract you from. But yeah, thank you for pointing that out. Does that help a little bit? But the bottom line is, as the Alter Rebbe is insisting, we can control what we think about or what we don't think about. If a thought pops into your mind, that's not your fault. It just means you're a potential Beinoni. That's all it means. It means you're a Beinoni in the making. Just don't dwell on it. Question also? Okay. Let's turn to Perek Lamed Aleph. Five lines from the bottom. Vezois. Again, we're trying to redefine ourselves as spiritual people, not as material or physical people. Vezois ti avidosei kol yomov. Besimcha rabbi, simchas hanefesh. That's the simcha that I should have. I need to realign myself that my simcha should be simchas hanefesh, not simchas haguf. Page mem. The top of the page says mem. It's the second page of page Lamed Aleph. Four lines from the bottom. But say some me'aguf ha'masuv v'shovel be'zavir. I need to realign myself as a spiritual being who says, wow, I just left captivity from within the body. V'shovel be'zavir k'nureh b'shas ha'teirah v'avoidah. When I learn Torah, when I'm davening, My soul's coming home. My neshama has left captivity of the body. Chaim Mirzal Liyos Kol Yomav B'Tshuva. To be always in a state of tshuva. Tshuva means returning, returning to yourself, returning to your true, proper alignment of being a spiritual being. Ve'en lecha simcha gedoyla k'tseis me'agolos ve'ashivya. There's no greater simcha than going out of captivity. K'moshal ben melech shahaya b'shivya. Like the moshal of a prince who was in captivity. Ve'teichem b'veso asurim in jail. U'menuvel bo'ashba, cast down in the dumps. V'yotza l'chofshil b'veso aviv ha'melech. And he goes free to back to the palace of the king. That's the way it is when a yid goes to learn Torah. That's the way it is when a yid goes to daven. It's like mamish coming home. Mamish coming out of the imprisonment of the body. Back to the palace of the king. Ay, v'afsha guf oimed b'shikutzoi v'si'uvoi. Ay, the guf is still there. I haven't escaped. I still have this body that tries to, you know, lead me astray, etc. The Zohar says it's called like a serpent skin. It's the language the Zohar says. Because the animal soul has not been transformed. Remember, that's only by tzaddikim. By a Beinoni, it didn't transform the Nefesh Bahamis. You still have a Nefesh Bahamis. But nevertheless, Mikol Mokim Tiyaker Nafshoi Be'enov. Those are key words, I think. What should be Yokar to you? The goof of the nefesh. You have a goof? Yeah, you have a goof, but it should not be yokar. The nefesh should be yokar, should be precious. Don't get excited. Don't be besimcha about pleasures of the body. You have pleasures of the body? Yeah. Okay, you're a regular person, like join the club. But don't let that dictate your simcha. Remember, we're trying to realign ourselves and redefine ourselves as being spiritual people. Don't let the simchas haguf mess you up. Try to stay focused on simchas hanefesh. You know, and it makes sense. It really is logical. Because when we're driven by what our guf wants, when we're driven by the objectives of our body, I'm not even talking about averus. I think we're past, at this moment, talking about averus. When I'm driven by what my body desires, then, in other words, when my nefesh bahamis dictates my happiness, what makes me happy, food, drink, sleep, procreation, etc., then my whole state of simcha is determined by things that don't last, by things that have no permanence. The food on the plate, I'm so excited. You eat it and it's gone. Where'd it go? But where I just went to fancy restaurant Manhattan, I spent $150. Where did it even go? 5 minutes later, it's gone. So when a person's simcha is determined by these type of things, or even something like health, that Baruch Hashem, thank God for our health, but what's going to be tomorrow, we don't know. I don't mean that in a depressing way, but we cannot rely on materiality. We cannot rely on the physicality. Whether it's things like health, wealth, kavod, other taivas in this world, whatever they may be, the simcha itself is based on something that's not permanent, based on something that is sometimes even fleeting. And we see what happens to people in their lives. A person's rich, boom, he loses everything. Imagine if his simcha sachaim was based on his financial well-being. Wow, rachmanis for that guy. Or health. We take these things for granted. Baruch Hashem, you wake up in the morning, your body works great. You take it for granted, especially we're young, so it's, you know, Baruch Hashem, we're usually healthy. But who says? Rachman al-Islam, people are suffering in this world. So when your happiness is based on these type of things, in other words, when your nefesh bahamis dictates what your happiness is, it's so fleeting, it's so temporary. You cannot control any of these. Cannot control your health. Cannot control your wealth. You can't control anything related to the material world. It's like the Friedrich Rebbe, the previous Rebbe, said about the state of Golus that we're in this world today. Mashiach should come speedily and take us out of Golus. The Friedrich Rebbe said that only the goof is in Golus. But the neshama can never be in Golus. The goof we can't control. The goof, it's in Golus. Can't control that. That's what happens. You want to be healthy? Doesn't always happen. You want to be wealthy? Doesn't always happen. Etc., etc., etc. I have no control over it. So if my happiness is based on it, psh. But if my happiness is based on the neshama, oh, the neshama is never in Golus. That I have an element of control over. Questions or comments? Now we come to Perek Lamed Beis, which is something of a quandary in the Tanya. Why is it a quandary? Well, you see, when the Alter Rebbe first wrote the Tanya, he did not write it as a sefer. It was written as kuntresim, pamphlets. At some point, they wanted to put it together into a sefer. At that point, the Alter Rebbe wrote another kuntres and inserted it in chapter 32. Totally like out of the blue, in a sense. It was not originally part of the Tanya. It was inserted later. And when you learn it, you see it's like a totally different thing. Now, people want to know, why is this here? So the simple reason is, anybody who's learned Perek Lamed Beis knows what it's about, off the top of your head. In fact, in Lubavitch schools, they learn it off by heart. Children learn it off by heart. Just today, our daughter stayed home from school. She was officially sick. She wasn't really sick, whatever. Everybody deserves a day off, right? But we were talking about learning Tanya Baal Peh. And she says, Tati, I know Tanya Baal Peh. I knew that. She does. But I said, oh yeah, what do you know? And she starts saying, V'hine adikiyum advar manal, yos gufso nivinimus be'enov. Starts saying Perek Lamed Beis Tanya. Every Lubavitcher knows Perek Lamed Beis Tanya Baal Peh. It's a common thing to know. Why? It's about Avos Yisrael. Oh, Perek Lamed Beis. Lamed Beis is chapter 32, right? What does Lamed Beis spell? Lev, heart. Oh, chapter 32 is the heart of Tanya, and it's about the heart. It's about Avos Yisrael. That's why the Alter Rebbe put it as chapter 32. It's cute, right? It's cute. And it's true. It's true. I'm not saying it's not true, but to me, it's hard to imagine that the Alter Rebbe put this chapter here to be cute. But rather, it's a direct flow from Perek Lamed Aleph. Look at the first words of Perek Lamed Beis on page Mem Aleph. V'hine al yidei kiyum hadvarim hanal hanizkarim le'el, which means through fulfilling the things mentioned above. Mentioned above? Interesting. Mentioned above. Where did he mention? Which things mentioned above? How about chapter 31, the chapter that we just finished? Yeah. So really, it's a direct continuation from chapter 31. Chapter 31 effectively is saying that we need to make the aspirations of our neshama the priority. That has to be my focus, not the aspirations of the goof. When I make the aspirations of my neshama my priority, in other words, when I let my nefesh elokis dictate what makes me happy, I can find true happiness. It's not temporary, unlike the simcha of the guf and the nefesh bahamis. Why is it not temporary? Why are the ruchnias tikka simcha not temporary? Because while I cannot, as I mentioned before, I cannot control wealth, health, and anything else material in my life, the ruchnias I can control because a relationship with Hashem is available always, no matter who I am. Even you asked me before about the person who does echta v'ashuv. For him also, the relationship with Hashem is available. So that I can control. The Gashmias cannot control. The Ruchnias, I can control it. Oh, this has another benefit as well, which is chapter 32. Namely, that this strategy for happiness that we just outlined, the strategy being that we have to identify with our neshama, right? This will also help me love another Jew. As we see in chapter 32. V'hine al-idei kivim hadvar manal, through fulfilling the things mentioned above in chapter 31. Lias gufay nivza v'nimas be'inav, literally means to view your body as disgusting and repulsive. Don't get too carried away with those words. I think the point is that we have to not make the physical world and the physical pleasures our priority. Rak simchos etia simchas ha-nefesh levado. The only simcha I should have is simchas ha-nefesh, as we said in the previous parak. Harezu derech yeshar v'kalo lover l'dekim mitzvah v'hatal derech kamoicha. This is the straight, easy way to fulfill the mitzvah v'hatal derech kamoicha l'chol nefesh misol l'min gadol b'yad kot for every single yid. When my daughter was saying this to me today, she said l'chol nefesh misol l'min gadol v'yad kimi achar, and she skips the word. So I said l'min gadol v'yad ka. She goes ton. Why? Because since the goof is viewed by you as secondary, that's not what guides you. Those are not your aspirations. But on the other hand, the nefesh and the ruach, who knows how great they are? They are so givaldic. Really, we have one father. Therefore, we're all called literal, actual brothers. Ach, achim mamish. What does it mean, mamish? Well, the best analogy I can think of, I'm not sure people in this room can relate to the same way I can relate to it, because it's the mashal of being a parent. But I'll share it, maybe it'll make a little bit of sense anyway. When your child gets something, whatever that thing may be, even something gashmius, even a piece of cake, you are happy. I'm happy that my child got something. Because that's me. Like, that's the same thing as me. In fact, in a certain way, I would rather that my child gets it. Like, sometimes, like, there's, like, someone in the house made cake or cookies or something like that, but it's not enough for everybody in the family. Parents will say, oh, I don't need it. You can have it. Give it to the kid. You can have it. I would rather that you have it. Why? Achim mamish. Every yid is a literal brother. Literal. So if you get something, if you have something, I'm just as happy as if I had it, and maybe even happier. But that's only possible if we view the nefesh of Bahamis and the desires of the guf as secondary and not guiding our life, not guiding our aspirations. Skip the line. Someone who makes the goof primary and the nefesh secondary, you cannot have a true love between you. Because it's going to be contingent upon something else. In other words, that unconditional love, which is what it means, v'ahavta l'recha kamoicha, like yourself, kamoicha, like you. That means unconditional, because I love myself unconditionally. Unconditional love is only possible when there's nothing else motivating me to have that love. So, when we have this shift in perspective towards making the soul the priority, that's my strategy, how to be happy, this will also help me fulfill the mitzvah of ve'ahavta l'recha kamoicha l'chol nefesh misrael l'migodol v'ad kotem. Questions or comments? Okay, l'chaim, see you next week.